Today on Tips from the Top Floor, a free webinar on wide-angle photography that I will hold on the 3rd of October. We'll look at disappearing files, sensors of varying sizes, and I will spill the beans on my thought process of why I sometimes take 10 minutes to take a single photo. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 842 for Thursday, September the 27th, 2018. Tips from the top floor, tips from the top. Hey, hello and welcome. It's Chris and you're listening to Tips from the Top Floor. I know this is short notice, but I hope that many of you will be able to join. I'll hold a free webinar next week on October the 3rd, 2018. It'll be about wide angle, about the challenges of wide angle photography and how to deal with them. And the webinar is free. It's held by Rocky Nook, my publisher. And what's important is an RSVP is required to participate and to get a replay link. So you have to sign up again. It's free, but the link to the RSVP is in the show notes. And again, the date is October the 3rd, 11 a.m. Pacific time. And in case you can't make it, as long as you are RSVP'd, you will get a replay link. Another quick note, let's kick this off with notes. Just one more and then we'll get into the photography. There were some questions from the Tips from the Top Floor Slackers about a message that some of you guys have been getting when uploading photos. And the message says something along the lines of storage exceeded and please switch to a paid version, a paid plan. You can safely ignore this message. We are on the free version of Slack, which allows, I think, 10 gigabytes of storage for files and photos. And we have crossed that threshold. And if new ones are added, the oldest ones get dropped. Or for the computer geeks among you, it's a FIFO buffer, first in, first out. Now, let me do the math. I started the Tips from the Top Floor Slack in April 2016, and it's now September 2018. And those messages have been popping up for a few months, let's say since April 2018. So we have about 2 years worth of photos in the Slack. So it's not a permanent record, but then again, I'm not paying for it. Now, of course, you could ask, so why don't you switch to a paid version of Slack? Oh, well, it is $6.25 per active user per month. And I looked at the stats for our Tips from the Top Floor Slack, which are impressive, because since the Tips from the Top Floor Slack started, you guys have been using it a lot, and you have posted 18,940 messages on the Slack, which is cool. You also used 5.7 gigabytes of storage out of the 5 gigabytes that are free, which is why we're getting this message in the first place. And there are well over 100 active users. A lot more are signed up, but the ratio between active and inactive users, there's always this ratio on forums and things, but the ratio is pretty good for something like our Slack. So, but with those numbers at the price of $6.25 per active user per month, this would come up to well over $600 a month to make this keep all the messages and images. And then, of course, until I stop paying. So that's probably not going to happen. I mean, unless every Slack user also starts supporting the show on Patreon with at least $8 per month, which, honestly, I don't think will happen. Or one of you is crazy rich and can just foot the bill for the TFTTF community. But I think that money would be better spent on a photo tour or a workshop. Anyway, keep posting. Don't worry about the storage full message. Just be aware that old photos and files and posts will, over time, vanish after about 2 years. And, oh, speaking of the Slack, you might remember the assemble yourself copy stand that I talked about here on a previous episode where I talked about scanning your own negatives or using a camera to scan your own negatives. In analog Slack news, Joe Russo ordered and assembled a copy stand, the one that I talked about. He ordered it from Germany. I have no idea what the shipment cost, but He documented how he set it up over a beer on the Slack. I really enjoyed that. Thanks for sharing, Joe. I will link to the thread on the Slack in the show notes. Let me say a quick thank you to this week's sponsor, HoneyBook. If you've ever started a creative business or you love anyone who has, you know it can be challenging and exhilarating all at once. One booking, one client, one referral, then another. That's the sweet sound of success. But what small business owner wants to spend their time on paperwork, endless emails, and dealing with payment collection? That's why there is HoneyBook. HoneyBook is a purpose-built business management platform for creative small businesses. They help photographers, designers, event professionals, and other solopreneurs save hundreds, if not thousands of hours a year by adding time-saving automation into their business. HoneyBook makes it easy to streamline the client process so you never miss a thing. And that's why, for a limited time, you, the listeners of this podcast, can get 50% off the first year of HoneyBook with promo code TOPFLOOR. HoneyBook membership includes unlimited access to all features at one low monthly price. So go to honeybook.com today and use promo code TOPFLOOR to get started. Again, that's honeybook.com, promo code TOPFLOOR. And I'd also like to thank Vistaprint for supporting this episode of Tips on the Top Floor. Being prepared when an opportunity comes up is crucial, and having a business card ready to go in your pocket is the first step to making something happen. With Vistaprint, you can create a truly professional, unique card in minutes. Upload your own design or start with one of their professional design options. Vistaprint offers simple tools and a wide range of templates to choose from. Then pick the paper stock style and quantity that's right for you. Choose your delivery speed, then order and receive your cards in as few as 3 days. Your next big opportunity is coming right now, and for as little as $10, you can feel ready to make an impression with a custom card that you choose. With Vistaprint, you can look and feel like a big deal, whether you're a startup or a business with a century of history. Vistaprint wants you to do something great for your business right now, which is why you, the listeners, will get 500 high-quality custom business cards starting at $9.99. Use code TOPFLOOR at Vistaprint.com. That's code TOPFLOOR at Vistaprint.com. TOPFLOOR at Vistaprint.com. And I thank them for the support.
Hi, Chris. This is George from Atlanta, Georgia, USA. I have been and am a APS-C sensor shooter. I use a Sony A6000. My primary lenses are a 50 millimeter 1.8 and an f/4 18-105. So both of those are, that's what's on the lens. And then I have to factor in the crop factor of 1.5. Through my portfolio and contacts that I've made, I've recently been hired to do my first wedding shoot. That wedding will take place in January of 2019. And my question to you is, now that I'm being paid for my work, do I need to or should I consider going to a full frame camera rather than the crop sensor camera that I'm currently using? Any input that you can give on this subject would be greatly appreciated. I enjoy your show and look forward to your answer. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Thanks, George. Well, first of all, congratulations on shooting your first paid wedding. That's awesome. In general, when it comes to cameras and sensors, both the APS-C format and the full-frame cameras provide excellent image quality. So don't worry about that. And especially the Sony sensors are great. So you won't really gain a lot from a full-frame sensor in terms of image quality, even in low light. The performance difference between APS-C and full-frame is really not relevant if you're shooting a wedding. Doesn't make a difference. I'd even shoot a wedding with like even a smaller Micro Four Thirds sensor. They're all really good these days. And I'll even go so far and say that if with any modern camera, if you take a bad photo, it's very likely that is your fault and not the fault of the camera. Now, what full frame will do is to get you less depth of field. And don't want to make this too complicated, but depth of field is a function of the focal length and the aperture that you shoot at. And the focal length, again, depends on the sensor size. So generally, And slightly simplified, bigger sensors will give you shallower depth of field. And if that's what you need, well, you could try doing that with a bigger aperture, with a larger aperture on a crop camera, and the difference is not that big, so I think you should be fine. Full-frame sensors will also give you an advantage when it comes to your angle of view. The same focal length, let's say you have a 24mm lens and you put that on a crop on an APS-C camera, that will be the same angle of view as maybe a 40mm lens on a full-frame camera. So the same focal length will be a wider angle on full-frame than on APS-C. But, however, depending on the lenses you own, there's a good chance you might have to buy new lenses that can cover the bigger sensor. And upgrading the camera in that case will likely mean that you'll also have to invest into new lenses, which, yeah, could be bad for your credit card. So keep that in mind. In general, if you shoot a wedding, I would say there are probably other things you need to worry about than the size of the sensor. What is really important is that you know your camera system, that you know what's where and how to get to certain functions. You have to be quick on your feet as a wedding photographer. That's a given. You have to be able to cover so many different situations, different light situations, different social situations. And I mean, there's the ceremony, and there is a reception, and there's maybe a party, and there is low light, and there's a people photography, and there's event photography. And if every time a different situation comes along, if every time you have to spend, I don't know, a minute or two searching through menus on your camera to find what you're looking for, then that will thoroughly be in your way. That will make sure that you don't get certain shots. Knowing your camera gear is an investment. I say this over and over again. Know it by heart. Know it in the dark. Know it upside down. That will help you be a good wedding photographer. Not just that, but if you get the technical things, the technical side, the technique out of the way, you can fully concentrate on getting those emotional shots that you want for a wedding. If you fight the technology with a new camera, hey, there's a good chance that you will not be able to concentrate that much on what the people do and not notice certain situations. And then in addition, if you know what will happen when on this wedding, if you're prepared, you'll get the shot. You might also want to think of, I don't know, renting a spare body, a second one for the wedding. Don't really have to buy one, but if you just rent that same model somewhere, just in case your camera breaks, they do. Cameras break, and often they break at exactly the moment where it's most painful. And as a wedding photographer, hey, you have a responsibility. A wedding cannot be repeated. Normally, usually. So in general, I would say upgrading to a new system just a few months before such an important gig, I think that might be detrimental to what you'll be able to do as a photographer. I suggest you spend more time with the equipment that you have and practice shooting with it, so you'll be able to cover anything that the wedding will be throwing at you.
Hey Chris, Andrew here from Utah in the United States. I have a question for you about what your thought process looks like when you're shooting a large format. As you know, when you're shooting 4x5, you have a lot more time to think about what you're doing before you actually trip the shutter versus shooting on like a DSLR or something. So I just want to know, you get to a scene, you see something, you know you want to take a photo of it. What's your thought process like from that point until you actually expose the film? Thanks. Really like the show. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say about this.
Andrew, thanks for the question. Utah, many great places for large format photography there. Really, really great. I remember being in Canyonlands National Park, and I didn't have a large format camera with me, but I would certainly do this if I went there, if I went back there. Now, my thought process when shooting 4x5, initially it was more of a checklist approach, because it has the potential for you to make a lot of mistakes. It's just in the process because it pretty much has you do every single step in the process. I'll go over those in a second. But that checklist has over time kind of been replaced with experience. I just know my way around a large format camera much, much better. And I, yeah, I, knocking on wood here, I don't really make these mistakes anymore, at least not as often. But I don't really have that cookie cutter approach these days for large format photography. It's more from the gut. So bringing it back to like bringing it into a list form is probably quite interesting. So here's my list. Of course, I'll look at stuff and go, is it worth shooting, right? And that's a gut feeling thing. You see light, you see, I don't know, big architecture, interesting structures, awesome landscapes. Usually things that are not fast, slow things, things that don't run away, because you will take your time with large format photography. Then, of course, I need a good composition. So I need to find a place for the camera. And that's where I use my eyes, where I walk around, where I try to find the right angle. And then I lock that in. That's the angle now. Tripod goes there. Camera goes on the tripod. And then I'll check if the light is good. Or if it is, how long will it stay good? I look up in the sky. I look at the clouds. Is it good now? Is it going to be good in 5 minutes? Because that's probably how long I'll take until everything is set up. Or if it's not good, will it be good in 5 minutes? Are there clouds moving? The motion of the clouds is important. And then I decide on the focal length, which sometimes simply depends on looking what lenses I brought. But is this, how wide is this? I rarely go out with longer lenses on the large format camera. I'm a great fan of the wide angle on those. But how wide, right? Is it 65 millimeters wide? Is it 90? Yeah, 90 millimeters is a wide angle lens on a 4x5 camera. So decide on the focal length. And then set up the camera. Unfold it. I have a field camera, so it's a folded camera. Unfold it. I set it up. I open the shutter. I put the lens on it first, and I open the shutter. And then I focus and frame the shot, which you do on a large format camera, you do on the focusing screen in the back. That's where the photographer will disappear under a cloth to cut out the daylight. It's easier to see this way. The focusing screen has the picture upside down, which means you kind of lose sight of the detail in the shot, which I find amazing because it makes it simpler to frame a shot this way. And I use the loop. I have a loop on a string around my neck. I use that for detail focusing. So the focus is exactly where it needs to be and is spot on. And then I will tilt and shift as needed. And that has to do with the framing, with the perspective correction, with the sharpness manipulation. It's one of those luxuries that the large format photography gives you. And that tilt shift lens also kind of borrows from large format photography, which is one of the reasons I'm such a great fan of the tilt shift photography with my DSLRs. And next is I'll meter the light. And for that, I'll use Pocket Light Meter. It's an app on the iPhone. It's also available on Android. You don't need a light meter. You can use an app for that. The camera in the phone is good enough for that. And then depending on what kind of a shot I want, this would be the moment where I also kind of decide if I want to push or pull or expose at box speed. And next is setting up the lens, setting up the aperture and the shutter, which are both in the lens, shutter speed. Again, based on the light meter and on my decision, how I really want to expose this shot. And then, let me see. I'll slide the film cassette into the camera's back. And before I pull the dark slide, I will double check just to make sure if the shutter is closed. One of the big mistakes, you have the shutter open for focusing and everything. And it's easy to forget that it's open. And then you pull the dark slide, you expose the film. And instead of a 30th of a second, you have several seconds because you don't notice. So double checking if the shutter is closed is important. And if everything is all right, then I'll pull the dark slide from the film cassette. And now the shutter is ready. I have a remote release in in the socket. The shutter is ready to take the shot. The exposure is set up. Everything's all right. The framing is done. The focusing is done. And now I wait. I wait for the light or the situation to be perfect, right? That might take any, I don't know. I look at the clouds. Do they move? Is that big mountain that I want to have in the shot in a good light? Or is that shipwreck on an Irish beach in the right light? That kind of stuff, you know? Trust your gut there and your experience with seeing the light. And then the rest is kind of anticlimactic, you know? It's, you have all this build up. And then the situation is right, light is right, and you go, click, and that's it. I find this so funny when doing large format photography. There's so much stuff going on, and then in the end you go, click. It's just amazing. And then I push the dark slide back in, careful. This is you have the shot now, right? It's on the film. It's on the sheet of film. Now you push the dark slide back in to close that side of the film cassette. I've seen photographers not get the dark slide straight, but at an angle, and then they pushed it and it fell out of the camera. And so, yeah, it's a bit of a technique thing. You hold it with one hand, you push it in, you wiggle it in with the other hand. If you have a really old film cassette, it can be kind of a pain to get it in. And then you lock the film cassette. Yeah, the film cassettes usually have like little locking levers on the top somewhere. You want to lock that so it doesn't accidentally open. And you remove it from the camera. That's pretty much it. One shot. 5 minutes. 10 minutes. 20 minutes. But that's all there is to it, right? It's just like a 15-step process. Yep, large format is a different beast, for sure. But hey, I love it. It has taught me so much about photography. And if you're in Germany, if you speak German, we have a workshop here in the villa, in the Viewfinder Villa, in November. There's still like one or two spots open on that one. So if you're in the area, check it out. You can learn all that here. But hey, I do love large format photography. And that was it for this episode of Tips from the Top Floor. Thank you so much for being around. And thanks to Vistaprint and Honeybook for supporting this episode as well. Of course, if you like this episode, let me know by giving Tips from the Top Floor a rating on iTunes. Still the most important place to be visible, or by supporting it in any other way. There's Patreon, there's word of mouth. I'm really grateful for all your support, and every little bit helps. More on tfttf.com/support. Thank you. Music for the show by Jeff Smith, Silent Partner, Hans Peter Kagrud Publishing, and Slack Challenges by Release Pixie, Matt Rassitar, Armset, Slack Invitations by Chief Invitation Officer, CIO Rusty Russ, and of course the link to get on the Slack is in the show notes. My name is Chris Marquardt. You'll find me on social media, including Mastodon at Chris MarquardT. Now go out and take amazing photos. Be nice to each other. And happy shooting. I remember that I told you there'd be sunshine after rain. And I told you there'd be laughter after pain. I remember that you said it ain't as easy as it seems.